The seventh case, Oshaksa v. Barnhart.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Barbara Barasti, counsel for plaintiff appellant Nancy Prochaska. Substantial evidence does not support the ALJ's credibility finding or his RFC finding in this case. Here, Prochaska suffers from back, leg, and knee pain, all of which were confirmed by MRI and CT scans. Her medically determinable impairment should have been considered in combination with her obesity and should have been considered how her obesity aggravates these impairments. However, the ALJ never even mentioned obesity in his decision. Prochaska weight is 5'2 and weighs 195 pounds, which puts her at a body mass index of 35.7. That's level 2 obesity. A person is considered obese if she has a body mass index of 30 or more. But here the ALJ completely fails to mention this. In fact, he never mentions obesity in his decision. This is contrary to this court's holding in Barrett, Clifford, and Gentile, and the commissioner's
obesity
own regulations.
Obesity is sometimes indicative of lack of activity, and of course if we grant this petition, she will become more inactive than she is now, I gather.
Well, she has medically determinable impairments both in her osteoarthritis in her knees, and she has the degenerative disc disease and protruding discs in her back, and also the sciatic nerve pain down her leg. And so she did gain more weight after these impairments because due to her immobility. However, she is unable to, as she stated, walk more than 20 minutes or half a block or stand more than 20 minutes, and therefore these things should have been considered. Because 021P instructs that the ALJ consider the effects of obesity when considering the claimant's subjective complaints of pain throughout this 5 steps of the sequential evaluation process. And here, the combination of her other impairments with the aggravating factor of her obesity would cause greater impairments than if she just had the arthritis alone.
And of course, there are a huge number of different doctor opinions in this case. And under those circumstances, why can't the ALJ simply decide, you know, which ones seem to present a more accurate picture?
Well, in this case, he did adopt Dr. Craig's opinion. He's the family physician who had been treating Ms. Prochaska. However, Dr. Craig's opinion at the end specifically stated that he was limiting his medical source statement to just her back pain. This was a medical source statement that he created during the workman's compensation claim that she had been going through, and instructions specifically stated to consider her work-related injury. That is only her back pain. Furthermore, he didn't diagnose her with her knee impairments, so those weren't considered in there. Dr. Lachman, who the ALJ never mentions in his opinion, was the one who diagnosed her with the knee impairment, and Dr. Lachman said that the knee impairment further aggravates her pain in her back and legs, and
which is why, I mean, it seems odd anyway, and it seems like Dr. Craig, if he thought that there were other things that contributed to the back problem, even if he was trying to focus for purposes of workers' compensation, he would have said something about it, or at least the ALJ could have so concluded.
Yes, but we can't make that assumption in this case because he specifically states that he was only considering her back pain, which makes it distinguishable from Starbuck, and which indirectly considering the treating physician's opinion, you could say that the ALJ implicitly considered the obesity. However, in this case, you just can't implicitly infer this. He didn't diagnose her with the knee pain. Dr. Lachman did. In addition, he never mentions obesity on the form. He was filling it out, considering the fact that he was talking about the conditions that the work-related injuries that she experienced, and there's just too many things like that which show that he did not considered, and it would be a stretch to say that the ALJ implicitly considered it because Dr. Craig implicitly considered it. Furthermore, it's not a medical source statement is not the equivalent of an RFC. The ALJ must make his own residual functional determination. And this is evidenced through SSR 96-5P, SSR 96-8P, SSR 96-7P, and SSR 021P. They all state...
When we get to this step five, though, I thought another argument you were making had to do with the jobs that the vocational expert thought that Ms. Prochaska could perform, in that as you take them one at a time, you say that even the accepted limitations means that she couldn't do them.
Right.
Now, that's something I would like you to talk about. Was the VE required, in your view, then, to take the DOT and just go job by job, you know, how many pounds or stooping or all these other things that...
Well, in this case, SSR 004P puts an affirmative duty on the ALJ to inquire as to whether or not the vocational expert's testimony was consistent with the DOT. And Donahue does not dispense of this obligation. Even the commissioner, in this case, concedes in her responsive brief that Donahue does not excuse the ALJ from failing to comply with SSR 004P, and that's stated on page 49, footnote 8.
Is it possible that most flaws in hearings are subject to some kind of harmless error rule. We excuse evidentiary mistakes all the time. We excuse all kinds of mistakes on the basis that they're harmless error. And so, as I understood the commissioner's position, it was even if the Social Security ruling had been violated by the failure of the ALJ to inquire, there are enough jobs here that are indisputably available that the error was harmless.
Well, again, it was not harmless error in this case because the jobs that the vocational expert was supposed to give were in response to a hypothetical, which was in between light and sedentary work with additional limitations. And the vocational expert lists the jobs of packer, assembler, cashier, and visual inspector. However, even the commissioner concedes that she cannot perform the jobs of packer and visual inspector, but states, well, this is harmless error because of the cashier and assembler jobs still exist because they're light jobs. However, this is inconsistent with ALJ's own RFC because he didn't limit her to light work. He limited her to less than light work. And he limited her in between light and sedentary work with additional limitations. And the cashier job, according to selected characteristics of occupational titles, requires frequent reaching, where she was found to only be able to do occasional reaching. The assembler job requires frequent reaching and frequent stooping. She was found to be able to do no stooping and only occasional reaching.
So basically, by the time you intersect what the ALJ, what the specially tailor-made limitations were, and that point in between the two categories, you're saying that the record doesn't show that there are any jobs.
Correct. The commissioner did not meet his burden at step five in proving that there were any jobs at that point.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, that's all I have for now.
Thank you. Ms. Kim?
Good morning. I'm Grace Kim, representing the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. It's the commissioner's position that substantial evidence does support the ALJ's finding that Ms. Prochaska could perform a significant number of unskilled light jobs identified by the vocational expert.
Maybe you could start with that, because I am concerned about, first of all, the failure to comply. I don't know why you would say there was an affirmative duty and then say, well, but there really isn't an affirmative duty on the part of the ALJ to inquire about conflicts between vocational expert testimony and the DOT. And then, as you go job by job, there is not a match, really, between these jobs and the limitations the ALJ defined.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. First of all, with respect to SSR 004P, there is an affirmative duty on the ALJ to ask a vocational expert whether there are conflicts with the DOT. And I think the reason behind that is to ensure that there's consistency between the vocational expert's testimony and the information that is contained in a document like the DOT.
Well, right, consistency and reliability. And this ALJ, you've conceded in your brief, failed to do that. So we have a problem already.
That's correct. But, Your Honor, our position is that the ALJ's failure to ask the question was harmless because, in fact, the jobs that are listed in the DOT do correspond with the DOT positions as they're described. With respect to the Cashier 2 jobs, which is described and included in the Commissioner's appendix, Ms. Prochaska contends that those jobs would be eliminated due to the stooping and the inability to, or the frequent reaching. However, the ALJ did not preclude all reaching. He only limited Ms. Prochaska's reaching to above shoulder level. He
Isn't that something that ought to be explained by the expert, though? I mean, you can't come in here and ask us to divine that from the record, I don't think.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's why this requires the expert to respond.
But, Your Honor,
the expert is the expert, and we want to hear from the expert. We don't.
I agree with you, Your Honor.
We don't want to have to plumb into all these things ourselves.
Ms. Prochaska was represented by an attorney during the hearing who did not question the vocational expert's testimony at any point. And if you read, and if you refer to
well,
the
I know, but this the obligation is on the ALJ. It's not on the petitioner.
That's correct, Your Honor. But I think a plain reading of the DOT description of the Cashier 2 job, for example, would show that under stooping, which is listed at page 3 of the commissioner's appendix, it says not present. Activity or condition does not exist. With respect to the reaching, again, my point is that the ALJ only restricted Ms. Prochaska from reaching more than occasionally above shoulder level. He did not place any limitations on her ability to reach below shoulder level. And then if you look at the general description of the cashier job, it's basically, you know, taking money, receiving cash from customers or employees. I mean, it's a very basic job.
Well, it says that, but then it says may sell candy, cigarettes, gum, and gift certificates and issue trading stamps. And I can think of a lot of, you know, Walgreens and so on where they have the cigarettes, you know, piled way up to the ceiling and you're reaching up to get them. I just don't see the information here, as Judge Cudahy says, without some more detailed attention from the vocational expert.
Well, Your Honor, the vocational expert was posed a hypothetical question that encompassed all of the limitations found by Dr. Craig. He identified 11,000 cashier jobs and 5,000 small products assembler jobs that Ms. Prochaska could perform given those limitations.
But no one ever asked him to explain why do you think that, given the fact that there is not an accurate fit between the jobs that you're talking about and her limitations. Maybe he would have had a reason. I don't know. But there is this affirmative duty on him to explain that. Maybe he would have said, although, you know, 11,000 cashier two jobs require reaching over your head, there are 3,000 that don't, you know, or something. I can imagine, but that evidence is not in the record.
Well, the commissioner submits that the DOT descriptions of the cashier and the small products assembler jobs are substantially consistent with the hypothetical RFC or the RFC that was posed to the vocational expert. We do not feel that this is a situation that warrants remand in order for the vocational expert to come back and testify about what I consider to be relatively small aspects about the description of the job. The description of the two jobs as contained in the DOT are substantially consistent with the jobs identified by the vocational expert.
Yeah, but that's not something that's in the commissioner's discretion. The regulation says you ask the vocational expert for an opinion on the subject. You know, and whether the commissioner thinks that's wise or unwise is not relevant.
I agree, Your Honor, that under the 004P, the commissioner was obligated to ask the question of whether there were whether his testimony conflicted with the DOT. But in this case, again, it's our position that the failure to ask was harmless because the description of the jobs contained in the DOT is substantially consistent with the vocational expert's testimony. We're talking about only a discrepancy about does she need to reach above shoulder level more than frequently, and I can't tell from reading the DOT that she would be required to do that. It just requires reaching frequently, but not necessarily reaching over above shoulder level on a frequent basis.
Now, this case was reviewed by the Appeals Council, I gather.
That's correct. Right?
And it's hard for me to understand. It seems to me that they ought to pick up, essentially technical problems of this sort. They seal all these cases all the time. But apparently they didn't pick it up, so I don't know what good their review is.
I guess that's an issue that is not before this court in this case. In this case, though, Ms. Prochaska did submit additional evidence. She asked for an opportunity to submit additional evidence to the Appeals Council, but she didn't do so. Now, with respect to Ms. Prochaska's contention that the ALJ did not address the obesity issue in combination with her other impairments, again, as we have argued in our brief, we believe that this argument is unsupported. Ms. Prochaska concedes that the ALJ considered and accepted the opinion of Dr. Craig, who was the only doctor who actually diagnosed moderate obesity. However, Dr. Craig identified no limitations resulting from her obesity and, in fact, identified work limitations that were consistent with the ALJ's RFC finding. Now, Ms. Prochaska is asking this court to take judicial notice, basically, that someone with a BMI, a body mass index of a certain number is per se disabled, but Ms. Prochaska is, in essence, asking this court
I thought the argument was more modest, that somebody with that body mass index was obese, and then the next question was that then factored into the RFC?
If that's how this court interpreted the argument, then yes, our answer would be yes. That was factored into the RFC when the ALJ adopted completely Dr. Craig's limitations regarding Ms. Prochaska's limitations. Furthermore, none of the many other doctors, at least five or six other doctors who examined Ms. Prochaska, found that she had limitations resulting from her obesity, even though they noted her excessive weight and height in their reports. So with respect to the obesity argument, we believe that Ms. Prochaska's argument is unsupported. And I believe that all of the other arguments, we rest on our brief, and if the court has no questions,
thank you.
We ask that this court affirm the commissioner's decision.
Thank you, Ms. King. How much time? You have 2 minutes for your rebuttal.
First, it's not harmless error that they cited the cashier or that the ALJ did not inquire as to any inconsistency between the vocational expert's testimony and the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. Not only with the cashier job, it's not just that she can't do the occasional reaching or the frequent reaching that's required, but she also was limited to 4 hours of standing. Light work requires 6 hours of standing, not to mention the fact that the definition of light work says that if there might be some operation of foot controls if you are sitting. And in this case, she can't use her left foot at all for use of foot controls. Therefore, that was not a harmless error. With respect to her obesity, we're not contending that a certain body mass index equates with disability. In this case, she had numerous medically determinable impairments, and it was the ALJ's duty to consider those medically determinable impairments in combination with her subjective complaints of pain, and that's required by SSR 96-7P. And one of the factors under 96.7P is you have to consider factors that aggravate or precipitate her pain. And in this case, SSR 021P states that you must consider her obesity as an aggravating factor. And that was not done here. And it can't be said that the other doctors considered her obesity. Dr. Craig, again, limited his RFC or his medical source opinion. And in addition, a medical source opinion is distinct from an residual functional capacity assessment. The ALJ must make his own assessment, and that includes a medical source opinion, but is not limited to just that. He must also consider daily activities, and he must consider the other evidence of record, lay opinions, factors that aggravate it. This is all stated in SSR 96 or 96.8P, which states that medical source opinion is one of the many factors that the ALJ must consider. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we move to Sanusi versus Gonzalez.